Are there words or phrases that you come across where you understand that the combination of the words means more than the individual words defined? Manifest destiny is one of those terms for me. Manifest destiny. When I first came across this term, I was 9 years old. Here's the picture I remember from the textbook. Familiar? Seeking a better understanding of the term, I looked up the individual words so that in my head, I began to translate manifest as display. I now know that it means to make happen. But then the definition that I found was display. So my internal dialogue went something like this every time I came across this term. Manifest means display, display of destiny, display of the future, display of what will happen, display of destiny, all in my head to help me grasp this concept of manifest destiny, which really it didn't. The term was coined in 1845 by a newspaper editor and promotes an ideology of Western expansion and a divine right to the land and resources. The core belief of manifest destiny concept was that the United States had a God-given right or providential mission to expand its territory and spread its system of government and values. John Gast's American Progress painting, which you saw earlier, visually depicts a white angelic figure leading settlers westward, stringing telegraph wire as they go. This expansion was seen as a civilizing mission to spread the colonizers' ideals and Protestantism across the continent. The ideology was also used to justify the displacement of and violence against Native Americans whose land was stolen and their ways of life desecrated. One of the worst and longest lasting atrocities was boarding schools or residential schools for Native American children. Several years ago, I had the opportunity to spend a week inside Canyon de Chelly in Arizona. It was a trip organized by someone at the First UU Church in San Diego. The organizer was a friend of Lupita's, whose farm we were on. The land in the Diné Nation, you may be more familiar with the Spanish name of Navajo, but that's not what they call themselves. The land of the Diné is passed down through the matriarchal line. So it was Lupita's farm. Not many people get the chance to do more than go and look at the public spaces, so I know how fortunate I was to have the opportunity to do this. Lupita grew up in the canyon on that farm, on the bottom of the canyon. After climbing our group, we went as a group, after climbing many of the rock faces, the group would stop to rest and Lupita and her husband John would tell stories. Lupita told us once of how she and her brother were sent up into the cliffs and slopes to hide from federal agents. But one day they weren't fast enough, and she and her brother were captured and taken from their parents and put in a residential school. Her school was sponsored by the Catholic Church. They saw other children there, but the nuns forbade them to speak to other children at all, and speaking their own language was also forbidden. Deviation from these rules carried harsh punishments. Their clothes were taken from them. Their beautiful long hair was cut short. And then they removed their eyebrows and their eyelashes. Lupita survived to tell her story, but many did not. Mass graves with more than 200 children in some cases have been found in multiple places. You may remember this from news stories in 2021. And before we try to make ourselves comfortable, by thinking that it was Catholics and other Christians leading these efforts, sanctioned by the US government. I've got some bad news for us. Yes, Unitarians made three attempts at residential schools. Two failed due to lack of funding, and the third lasted for at least 3 years, maybe more. Do I need to say that the goal was forced assimilation, domination, and colonization? The last residential school did not close until 1996. You can read more about this on the UUA website. All of these actions were aided by the doctrine of discovery. I wonder how many are familiar with the doctrine of discovery. It's okay if you're not. Right. I hadn't heard of it until 2012 at our Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly. We have been taught, socialized, to think of discovery as a good thing, maybe even progress as a good thing, expansion as a good thing. Reverend Mark Ward writes, "We grew up being told of the age of discovery, a time roughly from the 15th to the 18th centuries when courageous Europeans set sail to establish routes to trade with other people in Africa, Asia, and the Americas. But truth to tell, those sailors were interested in more than trading. Where they found valuable resources, precious metals, gems, and so on, they also sought to seize foreign lands for their own. In 1454, Pope Nicholas V issued a decree giving Portugal permission to invade and subdue non-Christian peoples in Africa and to enslave them. After Columbus's voyage in 1492, Spain received similar approval, and other European nations followed suit. And this is what became known as the doctrine of discovery, a religious justification for colonization and the enslavement of indigenous peoples everywhere. Discovery. We think of it as such an exciting word. I mean, isn't that what goads most of us into our in our work, discovering new things, to boldly go where no one has gone before, right? Whoever would have thought that it could become a shield for oppression, murder, enslavement, and even genocide? And yet it did. Those plucky pilgrims, Ward writes, among our religious forebears, paid little mind to the indigenous peoples who occupied the land they traveled to. To their eyes, they were looking upon pristine, virginal wilderness. Remember from America the Beautiful, there's a verse that goes, "O beautiful for pilgrim feet, whose stern, impassioned, stressed, a thoroughfare for freedom beat across the wilderness." It is that American progress painting. But nope, sorry. As Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz points out in an Indigenous People's History of the United States, that untamed wilderness was actually already occupied by some 15 million people, the majority of whom were farmers who lived in towns. Also, by their actions, it's plain it was not freedom that the settlers sought to spread across the country, but domination. Thomas Jefferson, he who proclaimed that it was self-evident that all are created equal, endowed with unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, was quick as Secretary of State to claim the European doctrine of discovery as a way of denying Indian claims to their own lands and opening it up to settlers. And later, Chief Justice John Marshall declared in a Supreme Court decision that due to the European doctrine of discovery, Indians had lost their rights to complete sovereignty as independent nations and would only be recognized as occupying their lands. Subsequent decisions designated Indian peoples as domestic dependent nations, forever subject to the control of the federal government. Those precedents not only remain in the law, but in years since have been used repeatedly to appropriate lands previously given by treaty and to remove Native Americans from their ancient homelands, as our neighbors in North Carolina, the Cherokee, experienced. They also were the basis of campaigns of violence against them, including moments that were nothing short of slaughter. Surely, surely the doctrine of the discovery is in the distant past. Again, no. It was cited as recently as 2005. The Unitarian Universalist passed our resolution repudiating the doctrine of discovery in 2012. We followed the Episcopal Church in doing so, and the Catholic Church finally repudiated this doctrine in 2023, just 2 years ago. The mindset of manifest destiny, discovery, and colonization, that tricky term that involves one group of people extending power over another, taking land, extracting resources, and imposing their language, laws, religion, and social systems, usually to the benefit of the colonizing power and at the expense of the colonized population, the mindset of that is with us all the time. What was done to the Native Americans was nothing short of genocide, and it hasn't stopped. Ask almost any Black or Brown person who grew up in the U.S., and they will tell you similar stories of the atrocities of their colonization and the horrors of slavery, Jim Crow laws, torture, and terrorism. And the U.S. continues to do it here at home and by funding atrocities in other lands on other people. So what is a Unitarian Universalist to do? Well, I do recommend the book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. It is published by our own UU publishing house, Beacon Press, and it was the common read in 2019-2020. The transformational theme for October is cultivating compassion. Scott Taylor writes that it's tempting to think of this month's theme as one of our lighter, more pleasant ones. After all, compassion sounds, well, nice. It conjures up warm feelings and tender thoughts. Images come to mind of telling people they're holding them in their hearts. It would seem to be all about emotional connection and empathetic feeling. But then comes along a quote like this by Andrew Boyd. Compassion hurts. Compassion hurts. When you feel connected to everything, you also feel responsible for everything. And we cannot turn away. Your destiny is bound with the destinies of others. Or this quote, which is cited in the Charter for Compassion. True compassion is to engage in the suffering of others. Both remind us that compassion is not just niceness and thoughtful feelings. It's about something deeper, an impulse that drives us to action. Indeed, that may be compassion's defining characteristics. It's distinguished by doing. To feel the pain of another, empathy has that covered, but compassion takes it a step further. It urges us to do something about the pain. In other words, compassion calls us to change things. It's not just about comforting others. It's about our comfort getting disturbed. It's about connecting with another's pain and struggle so deeply that we can't rest until they rest. When we feel compassion, real compassion, we don't just understand another's pain. We want it to stop, and then we do what's needed to make it stop. And if that's the case, take a moment just to think about what may be going on right now where we want to make it stop. And if that's the case, then maybe compassion's question for us this month isn't what we first imagine. Instead of asking us, How deeply are you able to feel? Maybe it's asking, what are we prepared to do? The first thing we have to do on this weekend is tell the truth and own the truth. That is the most direct route to cultivating compassion, it seems to me. No, we may not have directly participated in a doctrine of discovery, nor in the boarding schools, but we have benefited from those actions. And it is the water we swim in. One of my favorite terms these days is decolonize your mind. Take that, manifest destiny. I'm still coming to terms with what the phrase decolonize your mind means on the whole, but I think I have it in part. Decolonizing our minds is the conscious process of unlearning the harmful, pervasive systems and mentalities that were imposed by colonial powers, which often devalue non-Western cultures and promote the superiority of white Europeans. We have to examine and question our own beliefs, our values, and knowledge systems. Google it if you're unfamiliar. Go down that rabbit hole, you'll be glad you did. I watch us have a colonizing mindset. I watch myself do it. I watch others do it. I watch us do it as a congregation. I believe that cultivating compassion, being a people of compassion, living in such a way that keeps love at the center, that value around which all of our other values centers, means that we're willing to explore what it means to decolonize our minds. This is the growth that's truly important to us as individuals, as a congregation, as a faith, as humans, I believe. This is something I work at. I'm not saying I do it well. I am open to learning, and I would love to do that with you. I would very much like to be partners in that learning together. It doesn't mean that we will always do it well, but the very act of accepting our mistakes and missteps and not having to do things perfectly goes a long way towards decolonizing our minds. So if I were to create steps for us here today, this is a start, not a complete list. Number one would be tell the truth, accept the truth about our past as Unitarian Universalists and as citizens of the United States. We know what's up, and we have to look truthfully at what's at stake and make conscious choices to think of things in a broader and deeper way. The truth truly does set us free. It sets us all free. And if you think, oh my God, she's talking about some concept when we're about to lose everything, it's even more important that we look into what it means to decolonize our minds, because that gets us farther along the road. And two, learn to value non-dominant culture perspectives. I know we think we do this, but when we fall back into efficiency and expediency over relationship, as it's so easy to do, we're simply valuing time more than process. Three, call tomorrow Indigenous Peoples Day instead of the other. And while you're at it, Google the truth about Christopher Columbus and see what you find. Four, make repair. The UUA has acknowledged the harm done and owned our part in it. Many congregations whose locations have active populations of Indigenous people are building relationships with them. I have looked into how we may do this here, but I have not found viable leads yet. Please let me know if you have ideas. And five, act in community. We cannot do this work of decolonizing alone. It happens in conversation, in relationship, in community, in learning together. It happens when we're willing to listen to the stories that make us uncomfortable, when we choose humility over certainty, when we make room for voices that have too often been silenced. This is spiritual work. This is justice work. It is compassion in motion. Decolonizing our minds is not about shame. It's about liberation. It's about imagining a world that is not built on domination, but on mutual care and respect. It's about remembering that the land we move on, the communities we live in, the faith we share, all of it calls us into deeper awareness, deeper accountability, and deeper love. So may we commit ourselves to that work, to telling the truth, to learning what we were never taught, to listening with open hearts, and to acting with compassion that refuses to look away. May we be brave enough to decolonize our minds. May we be tender enough to let compassion disturb our comfort. And may we together begin to imagine what a truly liberated faith and a truly liberated world might look like. May we offer more than an acknowledgement, but true action. Amen. Blessed be, and may it be so.